the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so welcome to the latest episode of the Women's Football Podcast, the penultimate episode before we finish up. And with it being one of our last episodes, I had to get a very special guest on to help me record this show. So I've got a previous guest who is going to spend the whole show with me on this occasion. I have got Seattle Rea midfielder and Welsh international Jess Fishlock. Jess, how are you doing?
Hey, Kieran, I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well. Thank you very much for joining me. It's always a pleasure. And I know from the response that I have on Twitter when you are on, you are a very popular guest on the show. So to have you for the full episode will, I'm sure, be delightful for many people. So for this episode of the show, we're going to talk about a number of things. We are going to, obviously, with Jess on the show, we've got to talk about the NWSL, and we will have a look at the season and how her club, Seattle Rea, got on, obviously reaching the championship game, but unfortunately for Jess, coming unstuck in the final against FC Kansas City. We'll also have a chat about the FAWSL in England and the recent Continental Cup semi-finals that took place this past weekend. Following on from that, I've got an interview with young Arsenal starlet Leah Williamson, who is making a bit of a name for herself in England and also at international level for the England under-20s. We'll have a little chat about the upcoming World Cup qualifiers. Jess's Wales team have got a crucial game in Ukraine coming up. We'll have a little chat about the UEFA Women's Champions League draw. Obviously, Jess is now playing for Frankfurt in Germany. They are in that draw, so we will have a look at some of the ties that have been picked out. Backing onto that, Liverpool ladies did, of course, draw Linköping from Sweden. So I interviewed Danish striker Pernille Harder, who obviously represents the Swedes. And we'll have a chat about any other news that Jess or I can think of between now and the end of the show. So let's get going.
The Women's Football Podcast would like to thank our partners. Want more women's football? Subscribe to She Kicks magazine at shekicks.net. And the Women's Football Podcast is part of the Soccer Desk Network.
TheSoccerDesk.com.
Okay, so with Jess on the show, there is nowhere better to start than the NWSL. And I'm not going to go into too much detail about the championship game, Jess, because number one, it was over a week ago. And number two, I'm sure that having had such a great season but coming unstuck at the final hurdle, you're probably sick to death of talking about it. But I do have to ask, from your point of view, after such a great season where you were so dominant at home and obviously only lost two games in the whole season, what do you think it was that kind of came unstuck, if you like, in the final and saw FC Kansas City claim the championship?
I think it was a number of things, but I think, you know, I honestly just think that it was just one of those days. As crazy as it would be to say that everything that we've worked for came down to that game, and, you know, I could just say, or we could just say, you know, it was just one of those games, but I truly honestly believe that. I mean, Kansas defended unbelievably well. You know, they have, you know, not just in that game, but they did in the semi-finals against Portland too. They set out, had a game plan, were tactically brilliant. And, you know, their line run by arguably one of the best defenders in the world in Sauerbrunn. And, you know, it's quite funny because it's just not really that funny, to be honest. But what I mean is that when I was speaking to Harvey and any of the Rea players afterwards, that was probably the best we have ever played against Kansas. Because we always get stuck with Kansas because they're such a good side. And I've always said that from last year and from this year. But that was by far the best that we've ever played against them. And it's kind of a little bit ironic that in the biggest game that there is, we end up losing it. And, you know, but I would never, ever take anything away from Kansas because I honestly think that they have been consistently the best team in the NWSL over the last 2 years. And so if we weren't going to get it, then I was actually really, you know, it would be Kansas who I would expect to win it. So,
well, I guess when you look at last season we've spoken to you before on the show, and the difficulties that the club encountered with injuries and allocated players coming into the team late and anything else that might have gone on last season seemed to go against you. To turn it around, to finish second bottom in the league last year, to finishing runners-up, I guess those are the positives that you'll take into next year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, Harvey put the Seattle together this season that she arguably would have wanted to have started with last season, and set the balls rolling and had her whole team together and got the philosophy. And, you know, it was kind of, you know, that was hindered last year, and not just on the field, but off the field was a little bit hindered last year. And we just kind of had to get through it knowing that, you know, whatever happened would make us stronger this year. And that was our mentality. And, you know, I fully believe that that is exactly what happened this year for us, you know, again, on and off the field. And, you know, for us to be able to just go straight from the bat from game one and kind of grow throughout the year with all of our little jigsaw pieces that Harvey and Bill had masterminded together, it was fun, you know. It was really fun. And to see how much we've done in a year, I think, is incredible, really. And you know, it's actually just really exciting for the future.
Absolutely. Well, we do have to congratulate FC Kansas City, as you have done already. A phenomenal side, and Lauren Holiday almost unplayable on that day, and Amy Rodriguez finishing with some two clinical goals in the game to win it outright. Well, looking back at the season, Jess, I guess it would be worth us having a look at the NWSL Team of the Year that was announced shortly before the final took place. So I'll rattle through it very quickly. The goalkeeper that was chosen was Alyssa Nair. In defence, it was Kendall Fletcher, Ali Krieger, Christy Rampone and Becky Salbrun, who you've already mentioned. Midfielders, Veronica Burkett, Kim Little and a certain Welsh individual called Jess Fishlock. And forward line of Lauren Holiday, Nahomi Kawasumi, your teammate, and Amy Rodriguez. Any players that you would have included that weren't necessarily in there?
You know, I think there's a lot of talent in the league to try and fit into a one team. You know, I actually, going through it, you know, it was always difficult where you were going to put, you know, Holiday. I mean, if you had to put Holiday in one of the midfield, then, you know, what would you do type situation? And same with the defence, really. You know, I think Steph had a great season for us last year. So for me, maybe I would consider putting Steph in. You know, and not just us as well. I think Ashlyn Harris had a great season. You know, obviously Hope had a great season. But, you know, Naya also had an unbelievable season. There's just so much talent. And, you know, to try and fit it all into one team, I think, is difficult. But in saying that, I think it's pretty much, you know, I wouldn't disagree or probably switch anyone, to be honest. I think that Becky had a great season. I think Krieger was fantastic for Spirit. You know, obviously Fletch for us was great. And Bouquet, you know, she changed the Thorns and what they were about when she came. Kim doesn't really need any introduction. Let's be honest, MVP. And then you've got Holiday, who, you know, is for me still, I think, the best at what she does in the world in her position. Sumi and A-Rod, who, you know, won the final. So I think, you know, I mean, I wouldn't like to play against that team, would you? I wouldn't like to put a team together to try and play against that team either. So, no, you know, I think they all had fantastic seasons, and, you know, I wouldn't disagree.
Well, I got to vote this year, which was very nice, having covered the NWSL this year, and I'll stick my neck on the line and tell people how I went. I think I got 8 out of the 11 that were picked up. I think I went with Julie Johnston from the Red Stars over Christy Rampone, and I think that's more to do with the fact I didn't see a lot of Sky Blue this year. So I just went with Julie. I thought she was excellent. Obviously, she was named Rookie of the Year as well, and I thought she really stood out. I think I went Ellie Reid ahead of Ellie Krieger. Obviously, I saw a lot of Ellie with the games that I saw in Seattle. I thought she was phenomenal. I thought she was very good going forward and defensively for you guys. And I think the only other one, I got the midfield spot on. So I got you and Kim and Vero. So I'll take that one. Put Lauren Holiday. Yes. Amy Rodriguez. High five indeed. I think the only one, I didn't want to be too biased in terms of picking too many Seattle players. So I actually went, I didn't have Naho in there, and I went, well, actually, I didn't want to be biased. I put Jodie Taylor in.
I
put Jodie Taylor in for two reasons. Number one, she's obviously English, but number two, I think when a player like that comes into the league for the first time and really makes the impact that she did in a team that struggled, much like Seattle did last year, and scores the goals that she did, I thought for me she really stood out, and that's why she made my team. Probably biased because she's English, but the goals don't lie. She scored a lot of goals, and that's why she made my team. So for an Englishman who doesn't know much about women's soccer, I don't think I did too badly there. So, but I think for me, obviously I was very fortunate, as you know, to get out to Seattle and watch some games. I went out to Portland and watched you guys play against the Thorns. Watched a lot of games this year, not quite as many as I did last year, but the NWSL for me continues to lead the way in terms of entertainment, in terms of quality. I think when you look at the games, there have been some ridiculous score lines. When you look at the Boston-Portland game that finished 6-3 and Kansas getting walloped one game and then winning another, and just unbelievable entertainment and very difficult to predict where anyone can beat anyone. And I think next year is going to be interesting. Houston will have the year that they've had under their belt and they will be stronger next year. Boston will no doubt learn from the mistakes that they made this year, and let's make no doubt about it, they have made mistakes. But then I guess most teams have made mistakes and you learn from those. But a really interesting league to watch, and I'm sure that you are looking forward to next year, Jess.
Yeah, I am. You know, I agree with you as well, and there is a lot of people end up saying to me, you know, ours is the American League, it's just athletic, there's no technical ability, you know, it's just they're just athletes. And you know what, I would say to those people to watch it, because I don't agree with that. You know, I mean, they have players who are technically outstanding and players who don't suit the, you know, typical, they're just athletes, you know, stereotype that the Americans are always hit with. You know, a perfect one for that is, you know, you've got Becky Sauber on, you've got, you know, Cheney, Holiday even, you've got Pino, you know, you've got Press, Carly Lloyd, you know, Krieger. Are they strong? Are they powerful? Yes. But are they footballers? Yes. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so you always have to have a balance. And, you know, I think sometimes them as footballers get overlooked because they are so powerful and they are so fit and they have this mentality of, you know, we will never give up and we will not lose and we are Americans, and, you know, it's a mentality that you can't really touch, I don't think. Mm. But I don't think that it's fair to take away from the fact that there are some outstanding footballers, arguably the best in the league, best in the world for what they do. And I think that with, you know, the crazy schedule that we do have, you know, it does make it interesting, because there's times when you are, you know, fatigued like crazy and, you know, you've got to play and then fly 6 hours and then try and play another 36 hours later. And, you know, then it comes down to mental strength and, you know, it is. I do think it's, you know, for sure the best league in the world, if not, because it's not been there for so long, then it's definitely up there with the elite. And so, yeah, I have thoroughly enjoyed my 2 years there. And, you know, I look forward to a further few years with the Reign, I hope. So I have nothing but great things to say about the American League.
Absolutely, and if it was all about power and pace, those players would be on the athletics track competing in the Olympics. So, well, they did compete in the Olympics, but you know where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely phenomenal, really enjoyed it. The Americans will now be turning their attention to the World Cup qualification games that they will be hosting in the coming weeks and months. So that will wrap up what we talk about regarding the NWSL and America. And when we come back, Jess and I are going to have a little chat about what is going on in England.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about the FAWSL and the Continental Cup. In fact, let's start with the Conti Cup, Jess, because I know you saw Arsenal against Notts County, because obviously it was broadcast on BT Sport. Arsenal coming out 2-0 winners in extra time. Mm-hmm. They will face Manchester City, who overcame Chelsea 1-0 in their semi-final at home. What did you make of the Arsenal game? I got a bit of criticism on social media for describing it as an average game, but it wasn't something that I like doing. I don't criticise women's football very much, but I didn't think it was a particularly great game.
No. I think, you know, I streamed it from Frankfurt at the time, and yeah, you know, I have to agree. I don't particularly think that the quality was great, whether that was because it was a semi-final and, you know, maybe it was nerves and I mean, I don't know, but I just didn't, from what I would expect of England and of what they're doing, and, you know, they are getting a lot more attention right now, and the teams are, you know, saying that they're more professional and there's more training time and there's more this than I. Yeah, you know, I was disappointed in the quality of it. I mean, it ended up getting a little bit exciting because it stayed 0-0. So you were like, well, you know, are Arsenal going to get a goal that they so rightfully deserve? Because, you know, they were just bombarding Notts County, really. Or were Notts County going to get a goal from nothing, really? You know, and... You know, I think the right team won. I think, especially towards the, you know, when Kelly Smith came on, I think, you know, it's absolutely frightening how much quality she still has. And she completely changed the game. And, you know, their first goal, I think, was quite brilliant, to be honest, the finish. And, you know, everything good that did come from Kelly when she came on. But, yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with the quality, but I think, you know, you're saying that you've got some criticism because you came out and said that it was average and it wasn't a great game. And at the end of the day, when it's going to be on TV, you know, as women football as a whole, we have to be able to go, well, you know, that wasn't a great game, you know, and that's okay. It's okay to turn around and say, oh, did you watch that game? It wasn't really a great game. Because how many times do you watch men's games and you go, oh, that was an awful game? Or do you know what I mean? So I don't think it's right that you get criticism for just saying that. And I don't think many people who watch the game, I don't think would argue if you turned around and said, it wasn't the best game of football I've ever seen.
Mm. One thing I will never do is pick out individuals. I will never ever say so and so had a rubbish game or anything like that, because for me, this show is about promoting the game. It's about trying to introduce people to leagues that they're not so familiar with. And I know that we have a lot of American listeners who don't have access to the English league. So the last thing I want to do is say a game is great when it's not. But at the same time, what I will say is that I think there were some very encouraging performances from some young players. I will be playing an interview with Leah Williamson shortly. I think Leah has been outstanding this season. She is one that is really making a name for herself. Jade Bailey alongside her in midfield is a player that I thought gave a good account of herself. And Danielle Carter is almost leading the line on her own at the moment because of the players that Arsenal have lost. So I will never, ever criticise players heavily individually. But as I say, as a spectacle, I didn't think it was a great game. I thought Notts County played very direct, played a lot of long ball. They are clearly suffering from the injuries that they are encountering at the moment. Lots of players missing, and they were very one-dimensional for me. I think they were struggling to try and impose themselves. I don't really remember Emma Byrne having a huge number of saves to make. And as I say, it's just my opinion. It's neither here nor there. I'm not going to get into a spat about it, but I just thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree. You know, I did feel a little bit sorry for Jess Clark. You know, she obviously was working really, really hard at what she was doing. But, you know, there's not really an awful lot more that she could do rather than try and win throw-ins or try and win corners. And, you know, I feel that, you know, given the setup that Notts County have just moved to, you know, coming from Lincoln and now having the setup that they've got, from what I've seen, and I've not seen them all season, obviously, so I can't really comment on that, but they are in the relegation battle right now, and so I can't help but think that it's kind of been a little bit of a common theme that has gone on. And, you know, you'd like to think that, given what they've got, that they would have a little bit more than that. But I don't know whether that was just the one game. You know, I don't know whether it was just, you know, credit to Arsenal. They, you know, kept the ball better. They played it. They kept building pressure on Notts County, and so Notts had to drop deeper and deeper and deeper. But, you know, I agree. I think that, you know, it wasn't a great game. However, there was quality that won it, and I think that's something that, you know, we have to praise. And I thought that, you know, that Caroline Weir, Aviola Bauer, and I thought she played well. You know, I actually saw her get the ball out of her feet and hit, I think it was like a 70-yard diag right to Jordan's foot. Jordan took a great touch and tried to get a shot off. So, you know, there's quality in there. There's absolutely no doubt about that, you know. And like I said, when Kelly came on, she changed the game. And like I said, that Weir also took her goal really, really well. I just don't think that it was enough of it throughout the whole game.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. You said Lauren Holliday is the best in the world at doing what she does. Kelly Smith is the best in the world still, even at the age that she is.
Yeah, absolutely. You could just see when she came on, and she had one touch where she, you know, went across the box and just glided past players still. And, you know, people are saying that she still has so much quality, but it's the legs that have gone, yet she still glides and does what she does. So, absolutely. I mean, and that was it for me, you know. It wasn't a great game, but Arsenal had more quality and took and used that quality to score the two goals when they came. So, you know, and I will make a shout out to Carly Telford, because I thought she made a good few saves, and the game probably would have been over by full time if Carly hadn't stood up big. So
couldn't agree more. Friend of the show, Carly Telford. So I completely back you up on that one.
She can buy me a coffee after that.
Yeah, she can do.
You know what I like. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, Mike, obviously they'll face Man City in the final, venue to be determined. My comment about the quality of that game actually followed on from a game that I watched last night. We're recording this on a Wednesday night. Tuesday night there was a game between Everton Ladies, who currently sit bottom of the FAWSL, against Birmingham, who is second. Again, didn't think it was a particularly entertaining or quality game. Everton battled, as they will have to, sitting bottom of the league, and Birmingham missed a few chances. But again, I think Rachel Brown Finnis maybe had a few saves to make, but nothing too demanding. But again, looking at the league, Jess, a big job for Everton to pull themselves out of there, and obviously it's now a free horse race for the title between Chelsea, Liverpool and Birmingham.
Yeah, and it'll actually be interesting. I mean, I think the relegation that is the relegation battle that's going on is a little bit interesting. I know that I think there's 4 points between Everton and Notts County right now, and they've got to play each other. So, you know, I mean, that can be really interesting, and it does make the league interesting now that there's a relegation in there. So, you know, that's fun, and it'll be, you know, there's only 4 games left, so it will be really interesting to see what happens there. Like you said, Everton are fighting right now, so it'll be interesting. It'll be sad, I think, to see Everton get relegated if they get relegated for. We see the history of what they've done for women's football in England also, and how much success they've had in the past in Champions League. You know, I think it'll be sad, personally. I will. I remember, you know, when they were under Mo Marley, and, you know, they were hugely successful. And, you know, so that will be sad, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, and I think at the other end with Chelsea and Birmingham and Liverpool, that'll be equally as interesting. I said at the very beginning that I tipped it to be Birmingham, and I think the reason that I said that was because they've probably not had as many overhauls as many of the teams in the league. You know, they've kind of just had a consistent team and just kind of tweaked here and there, and I think that's what has been key for them this season, is they're just, I think, one of the most consistent teams of the year. So I did tip them. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to change it either. So I hope that they bring it home and they bring it through. But it'll be interesting. They're all good sides. You know, Chelsea have had a good season. And, you know, it's good for them to have a good season, actually, because up until this season, they've struggled a little bit, even with all the signings that they've had. And it'll be interesting to see if Liverpool can pull it back and win two titles on the bounce. So, you know, it is an interesting situation.
Yeah, exciting finish to the season. I think those three teams have got three games left between each, and it will be interesting. It's in Chelsea's hands. If Chelsea win their remaining three games, it will be they that will be crowned WSL champions. But as you say, Birmingham hot on their heels. Liverpool have a little bit more to do. They will be heavily relying on the top two dropping points at various points. And yeah, I think for me, I got it horribly wrong at this beginning of the season. I will hold my hands up. I think I said it would be a top three of Liverpool, Arsenal, Notts County in no particular order, so I have failed already.
But, that is a fail.
Yeah, Helen Ward was very smug in the last show because she tipped Birmingham as well, so you two, that's why you two are the professionals and I am the amateur. But I think on that note, I will finish up our roundup of the WSL. But as I mentioned, Arsenal ladies are in the final of the Continental Cup. I mentioned that Leah Williamson was one of the players that has been a standout for them this year, and I managed to catch up with her this week to talk about her season with Arsenal and the England under-20s. Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined by Leah Williamson on the latest episode of the Women's Football Podcast. Leah, you've just come off the pitch after an extra time 2-0 win over Notts County Ladies, sending you into the Continental Cup final. How did you find it?
I'm delighted to be in the final, but it was a tough game. We knew it was going to be a tough game. Just had to fight to the end, really. But we knew the goal was coming, so it was...
Second final for the club this season, your second final in your breakout year. You must be pretty delighted with that as well.
Yeah, I don't think I could have dreamed it better. So, I mean, this is... To be even be on the pitch is amazing for me, so to be in a final is just, I suppose I'm blessed this year. Somebody's watching over me, so this is good.
Well, a couple of months ago, Kelly Smith just walked past us and yelled out something that I didn't hear. Kelly was actually someone who said, you need to watch out for this girl, Leah Williamson, at the start of the season. Now, coming from someone like that, recognised as one of, if not the greatest players ever to play football in this country, I mean, that's quite a statement from her. How did you come into this season knowing that there was going to be a little bit of focus on you?
Do you know what? To be honest, at the start of the season, if you'd have told me I'd be in this situation now, I'd never have believed you. So I just wanted to get in the mix and basically do what I've been doing throughout my youth career to get to this point. But, I mean, Kelly, I've got pictures with Kelly. I've got signed pictures, you know, that Kelly's done for me. So she's always been one of my heroes and somebody I've looked up to. So I just wanted to be amongst that and be in the squad. And luckily, it's all progressed pretty quickly.
I think what people might forget, though, is you're just 17 years old, but you've got some experienced heads around you, Kelly being one, Rachel Yankee. How much are you learning from them, and how much are you kind of going to them for advice and sort of, you know, trying to almost pick up the attitudes that you need to succeed at this game?
You watch them around the training ground on match day. They're so professional. Everything that they do, they have a routine. So I'm trying to pick up little traits while still being me, I suppose. But, the tempo, I mean, to have Kelly in the team, like you say, being such a prolific person that she is, you just learn so much. She sets the tempo. So if I can even get close to that, then I'm halfway there, sort of thing. So...
You played centre midfield today, but you played in defence as well. What is your favourite position, or where do you prefer to play when you get the opportunity?
Centre midfield, definitely. I feel like I have a lot more energy to give. I mean, fullback is you know, physically hard as well, but when I'm at the back, I want to get involved, and then I think sometimes I can make mistakes because I'm too keen to get involved. But midfield, up and down, defending, attacking, that's me, really.
We've seen you in midfield, box to box, not so long ago. You got your first league goal for the club. Nice little finish against Chelsea. Talk us through that one, because that was a bit of a peach, wasn't it?
Yeah, and again, I don't think I could have asked for a better first goal. But I just gambled. I knew she was going to play it back there. I was just going to press the keeper, but luckily it fell to me and saw she was off her line, so I just chipped her, really.
How hard has it been for you this season? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Arsenal. They're so used to being top of the league and winning every game, and well, not every game, but most games, and obviously winning every trophy that's available. This season's been a little bit different, more because other teams have been strengthening and have kind of caught up. For you coming into this team this year, especially at the start when there was a bit of a struggle going on, how did you kind of deal with that?
Coming into the team this year, I knew it was going to, you know, I knew it was a transition phase. I spoke to my mum about it. We knew what the, you know, the circumstances were. But I think it's healthy, and I think everyone at this club knows that it's healthy to have competition. Arsenal have ruled the, you know, they've ruled it for years now. And to have a competition at every game, knowing that you're going to get a good game of football, the girls are embracing it. Obviously, it's not ideal that we're not, you know, doing as well as we hoped we would, but we're still in two cup finals. So when people, you know, are criticising, I'm questioning where we've gone so wrong.
I think that's, you make a very valid point there. I think people have, some have only been critical, I wouldn't say it's everyone, but the fact is you've got an FA Cup in the trophy cabinet, you've got a final in the Continental Cup to come up, so it's not all bad. As well as Arsenal, you also went out to Canada and played for the England under-20s. Maybe didn't go as well for the team as you would have liked, but for you, jumping up from under-17s football right into the under-20s, how did you find that?
Again, I was, just to be going, I was so grateful, I was so happy. So to get three full games under my belt was incredible, really. But I suppose the versatility that I have does help me in that I can fill in. So I suppose that, you know, that's given me opportunities. I don't think I maybe would have started so many games for Arsenal this year if I couldn't have played centre-back, so...
Does it feel like you're being fast-tracked in a way? You know, I already mentioned 17 years old, and I do have to emphasise that because you play with such a maturity and, you know, the head on your shoulders is clearly years ahead of your actual age. I mean, how do you kind of focus on developing your game? What sort of things are you doing to try and make sure that you're able to meet the standard of the WSL, which is continue to improve?
Do you know what? I think the main thing for me is just being brave. You know, when you're in training, I've proven to myself that I can compete at our level, but going into other games, you know, people are going to press you hard, people are going to, you know, they're older than me, so they see me as a baby, maybe a bit of a pushover. So I think just being brave, getting on the ball, and I'm lucky, like you say, to be surrounded by so many other, you know, and very mature players that can help me with that. So just learning off of looking at them, learning what they're doing, trying to replicate it. So
I guess the ultimate aim at the moment is, as well as winning trophies with Arsenal, it's to try and... So I've just had Casey Stoney tap me on the shoulder there, which has completely thrown me. I guess the ultimate aim really is to try and build your way up through the England ranks and try and maybe Canada 2015 might be a little bit soon, but I guess there's obviously a European Championships 2 years after that and then a World Cup in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a very lucky position that I've still got a couple of years at the under-19, so I've got one more World Cup that I could go to in that age group. But like you say, if you're not aiming for the highest level, then what are you doing it for, really? But like you say, I mean, being realistic, I set myself realistic targets, but I'm lucky that I am so young and I have so many opportunities still ahead of me.
We'll emphasize that again, 17 years old to those people listening, very mature on the pitch, very mature off the pitch, judging by this interview. Leah, thank you very much for joining me. You're taking a bit of a knock in this game, so I'm going to let you go and get some treatment.
No worries, thank you very much.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so that was Leah Williamson talking all things Arsenal and England under-20s. Do keep an eye on her because she is a star in the making. We're going to move on. Lots to pack into this show, and we're going to move on to the upcoming Women's World Cup qualifiers. There are some crucial games going on in the European sector of the qualification, and we might as well start with Jess's Wales side, seeing as they have a huge game away in the Ukraine. Jess, arguably one of the biggest games of your career for Wales?
Yeah. I think so. It's going to be a very intense few days, I think. You know, we've got a lot to go through. Obviously, trying to deal with the disappointment that was the England game. Because I know that still hurts a lot of us. Try and get past that. Well, have to get past that, really. And then, you know, try and get a result in a really difficult situation, I think. You know, going away to Ukraine right now is going to be tough, I think, and I think that we're going to have to really rally together and come out of it. But you know what? I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really excited. After playing them last time, I think that we've got a good chance. We've just got to, I think, maybe just believe a little bit more, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, you know, it's a huge game, but that's what you do it for. You know, you do it for these type of games.
What did happen in the England game, if you don't mind me asking? You gave him such a battle in the away game at Millwall.
I know. You know what? I still honestly sit down with a cup of tea and go, right, okay, Jeff, let's try and like break this down. And then I sit down and I hold my cup of tea and I just go, no, I can't. Not today. I can't today. Try again another time. And you know what? But I'm probably still at. I still probably haven't done it yet, because as soon as that happened, we had our semi-final not 2 days later, and then we had to try and focus on the final, and then I was moving to Frankfurt. So I guess I've been really, really happy and really lucky, because I've had a lot going on, so I've not really focused so much on it. But I think now will be the time where we can go in and reflect. And I honestly just think that it was just a too big of an occasion for us. Mm. And we don't get to play those games enough to really understand it and really get in a position that we can deal with not having a lot of the ball, and then deal with, you know, the chances when we do get them, because we'll end up snatching. You know, I think we did have a couple of chances on goal before they scored their goals, and we just snatched at them. And you know, we don't play top teams, top seeds teams enough to be able to deal with that environment and that pressure and that situation.
Okay. Well, moving to another home nation, Scotland. They've got two huge qualifiers coming up. Well, let's say one, because one of them is at home to the Faroe Islands, and you would expect them to win that one comfortably. Sweden play at home to Bosnia, and then the two sides face each other, with Scotland needing to better the result that Sweden achieved in Scotland, in Motherwell, earlier in the qualification campaign. Now, that is, we're talking about big games, that is huge for Scotland to have to go to Sweden and try and win, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it looks a lot. It looks a lot more daunting because of the result that happened at home for Scotland. You know, I think they were extremely disappointed with that result. But I, you know what, I think they can do it. In fact, I don't think. I know that they can do it. I know that they have a good, solid team, a good, solid base in both defence and attack, and you know, and that they have a little superstar right smack in the middle of it all, who I think will be the key to them going to the World Cup, and that's honestly, I honestly believe that they will be in Canada 2015. If it's not through a result next week against Sweden, then they'll be my number one team to make it through the playoff situation.
Be a big game if you played each other, if you make the playoffs as well, wouldn't it? That'd be an interesting one.
Well, to be honest, you know, put my money where my mouth is, I'd take that back, because if we were playing them, then, you know, obviously Wales. All the way. I'll be like that. Kimmy!
Hello, Kim. Hello.
I'm not leaving your side, Jimmy.
Oh, God. Well, lots of games coming up across the seven groups over the next week. France will qualify if they win one of their remaining two games. They've got Finland on their heels. They're the only team that can catch them. England, we know, have qualified already from Group 6. I'm making my way backwards because I'm scrolling up on a website as opposed to down. Norway, they will qualify if they just win one more game. They've got the Netherlands hot on their heels. Sweden and Scotland, we've already discussed in Group 4. Switzerland, we know, have already qualified from Group 3. It is a case of Denmark or Iceland, who will finish up runners-up behind them. Group 2, Spain and Italy are the two teams in contention. Spain currently have a 3-point lead. And in Group 1, Germany have a 5-point lead over Russia with 2 games remaining. And those two teams actually do face each other this weekend. Let's move on swiftly, shall we, Jess? We only wanted to touch on the World Cup qualifiers because obviously they haven't occurred yet. And we'll talk a bit more in the next show after they've happened and we know who's qualified. We know that the UEFA Women's Champions League draw was made recently, and you will be involved this season because you signed for Frankfurt. So for anyone that is unaware, do you want to tell us how that move came about?
Sure. As you know, as everyone will probably know, I do like a little bit of off-season football.
Yes.
And I think that for me, it was a case of, you know, I do need a little bit of a break. And, you know, I didn't want to travel anymore, as crazy as that sounds, I think. And I want to be...
Well, you failed there, because Frankfurt have got to go to Kazakhstan.
I didn't want to travel, and then we go to Kazakhstan.
So, okay? You've got to play Kazigurt of Kazakhstan. So you didn't want to travel, you failed there.
Yeah, exactly. But no, you know, I wanted some time closer to home as well. You know, I've already had some, you know, some visits to Frankfurt already, and, you know, my family have already sorted out their visits to Frankfurt. We get a break over winter to have a little rest. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm arguably playing at one of the best teams in Europe, you know. I mean, Frankfurt is a top side. There's Champions League. They have every chance. We have every chance of progressing all the way, I feel, from what I've seen just this week with the quality that is in the squad. And I'm actually, you know, I'm honestly really, really, really excited. I kind of got that little bit of buzz and excitement when I first got my first move to Seattle 2 years ago. And it's so fun to have that in an off-season too, you know. So, you know, I know people turn around and say, oh, you don't get to rest and you need to rest and you're going to burn out. And I understand that, but, you know, the season is so short now. Some women's football seasons, you know, it's like 5-6 months that US won, and I can't go 6 months without playing competitive football either. And the beauty of the Bundesliga and with Frankfurt is that they have a winter's break, so we'll get some time off and some time to rest then, and then we can go again and then go straight back into the NWSL and hopefully, you know, have a chance of getting back-to-back titles again. And, you know, it's something I'm really, really excited about. And, you know, Champions League is huge for me too. You know, I had a little taste of it last year, and it just got my hunger going again a little bit from when I was in there before then. So there's honestly, it's just a win-win situation for, I think, everyone that's involved, really. And I'm honestly been there for a week and, like, so excited, really, really excited now to, you know, as much as this international break has come at a good time, because I did want to come home for a little bit, I'm actually also on the opposite side of that. I just wanted to stay and train and get my feet going a little bit more, because I just want to get in a position where I know the team and I know the squad so I can start playing.
Mm. So let's look at that. You've mentioned the Champions League. Let's have a look. We've already mentioned that you've got to go to Kazakhstan. I don't know if you know anything about your opponents, because I certainly know nothing about them.
No, you know, I really don't. I did not even know that Kazakhstan was on the border of, like, China. I was like, oh, it can't be that far. And then someone was like, it's an 8-hour flight. And I was like, what? How is that even possible?
Yep.
But
Arsenal had to do it last year. Arsenal had to go to Kazakhstan last year.
Yeah, because I spoke to Kim about it. But I, but as much as that is, like, a disastrous away trip, I think the draw itself that we've got, both this round and next round, is a winnable tie for us. And so that's, you know, I think that's the most we've managed to avoid, like PSG and you know...
Lyon.
Lyon, yeah. We managed to avoid the bigger teams that we would, you know, hopefully have to deal with at a later stage. So as much as, yes, it's not an ideal away trip, it's also one that I think that we would have taken.
Absolutely. And it for any Americans or anyone that's listening that doesn't understand what Jess meant there by the next round afterwards, might be a bit alien to some people, and certainly will be to football traditionalists. When the Champions League draw is made, they do a draw for the round of 32, but then immediately afterwards they do a draw for the round of 16. So, as Jess mentioned, she has a trip to Kazakhstan for the round of 32, and she already knows that if she gets through that, she will play Pomerge or Torres. I'm not even sure where Pomerge are from, but Torres are certainly a well-known Italian side. So, as you say, definitely a winnable tie in the last 16, should you qualify, which you should do, to be fair, against your Kazakhstan opposition. Looking at some of the other games that have been drawn, Glasgow City will go to Poland and play Medic Konin. Rosengard, Swedish champions, will have to go to Russia to play Ryazan. God, I'm going to get absolutely annihilated for the pronunciation. Should be letting you do this, Jess. You're the footballer, not me.
I know. I'll probably be even worse.
Oh, God. Olympic Lyon, I'm not going to go through all of them. Lyon have got to go to Brescia of Italy. And unbelievably, Lyon will play PSG in the next round, they qualify, which is a ridiculous... It's so stupid to get those two teams in the last 16.
Didn't PSG have, like, a similar...
PSG had to play Tirso last year.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yeah,
PSG had to play Tirso.
They have, like, zero luck when it comes to this tie.
Yeah.
It's quite funny because it is, you know, it is completely the draw, the luck of the draw. It really, really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't argue with that.
I do send my sympathy to PSG. But you never know. I mean, them against Lyon will be a great round of 16.
Continuing down the list, let's pick out a few others. Bristol Academy, obviously English club, they will go to Raheny United of Ireland, so that will be about as close to a local derby as you can get. A nice short trip for them to Ireland. We've already mentioned a few of the teams. We mentioned Torres. Wolfsburg, the holders, have got to go to Stabæk of Norway. That will be an interesting tie, but again, Wolfsburg should come through that one unscathed. PSG have got to overcome FC 20 of Holland before they have their potential tie against Lyon. And I've deliberately left Liverpool Ladies last because they will be making their debut against Linköping of Sweden. And the reason that I have left that till last is because I spoke to Danish striker Pernille Harder about the tie against Liverpool and Denmark's upcoming World Cup qualifiers. So here she is having a chat with me recently. Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined by Pernille Harder on the latest episode of the Women's Football Podcast. Pernille, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
So I wanted to have a little chat to you about a few things, and I think there's nowhere better to start than the UEFA Women's Champions League. We've been discussing it on the show, and as an English-based podcast, we are obviously interested in the fact that Linköping have been drawn against Liverpool Ladies. Now, when you saw that draw, what was your reaction?
First I was a little bit unhappy because I think Liverpool was one of the best team we could meet in the first round. But afterwards I was like, it's nice to meet a good team and to have a real match. And then to play against a big club. So I'm looking forward to it.
Because obviously Linköping were a seeded side and Liverpool Ladies were unseeded. So I guess what you're saying is that there could potentially have been an easier draw in there for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what do you think you're going to have to do to try and overcome that tie? Obviously Liverpool, champions of England as it stands, they're currently not at the top in England at the moment, but they are fighting for that position. What's going to be the key to trying to overcome them, do you think?
I haven't looked that much of, I don't know how they are playing, actually. We haven't talked about that yet, but I think we should just play the way we play, and we also need to be tough. English football is hard, very physical, so that we also need. But we are good football players, and we should just keep playing football. And then I think we can beat them.
Okay, excellent. Well, we wish you luck for that one, and we'll certainly be keeping a close eye when the tie comes around. Obviously, the Damallsvenskan is coming to the sort of final straight of the season. There's a few games left. You've got 5 at the time of recording. I know you've got a game tomorrow night, which is Monday. You're currently sitting just outside the Champions League places. Do you want to give me a little summary of how you feel this season has gone?
The first half, it was okay, because we had a lot of injuries. Many important players didn't play, and I think the other players who played did it very well. One against Malmö, but it wasn't. We needed to change a lot in the start 11. We won some good games, and then we lost some games we should have won. But in this second half, we have got a good midfielder from Portugal, Claudia, and the Danish defense, and I think they have come with a lot to the team, and we have won all the matches. So I think it's good.
Now, you missed the start of the season yourself, didn't you? Because you suffered quite a bad injury in pre-season. How are you feeling now? How has the injury progressed, and do you feel fully fit now?
It has progressed good. I was out for 3 months, but now I'm almost at my normal level, or what you call it, the level I had before my injury. But I still have a little bit physical, but I'm getting closer.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Well, I think you've got 9 goals in 9 games is what I saw. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but that added to the 17 that you scored last year. I think only Kristen Press was able to better that. What's been kind of the key for you? You're still a very young player. What's been the key in trying to adapt to Swedish football, because the league is seen as one of the best in Europe?
I don't know. I have just played my play. I think, I don't know. When I came to Sweden, I knew that it was one of the best in Europe, and I just ran in and played the way I play, and it fit. I was fitting well in Swedish football, I think, even though I'm not a big player. But in Linköping, we also play a lot of football, like I said earlier. So I just fit in very well, and then I started to make a lot of goals also. I just focus on the way I should play and the way the team plays, and I focus on develop all the time.
Okay, no, that sounds good. That's excellent. And when you play in the Champions League, you obviously get the opportunities to play against players from some of the top leagues. Obviously, you'll get to come up against, as we've already discussed, Liverpool. What do you learn when you play in Europe, when you're coming up against players from different countries?
You always learn something from the games you're playing, and it's funny to play against different leagues from different countries, like international teams. So, you learn some tactical and some technical all the time, and you find out that you need to play fast so you can come through the defense to make goals, and the quality is getting even better. So,
excellent. And you mentioned national teams there. Moving on to Denmark, obviously, you have 2 very crucial World Cup qualifiers coming up at home against Malta and Israel. Malta are yet to pick up a point in the group. They certainly haven't won a game. And Israel, I think, have only won a few games along the way. Is it too early for me to say that you should come through those games quite easily and you should be booking a playoff place? Because obviously Switzerland have won the group already.
I don't dare to say that, because we played 1-1 against Serbia. So we really need to work hard and win those 2 games, and we need to win them big to make goals, especially against Israel. I'm not sure that the goals in the Malta game will be in the end score or what, I don't know what it's called. But we need to make a lot of goals so we can be one of the best in the second in the groups. I think it's only four who is getting to the playoff, and right now we are not one of the four best. So we need to make a lot of goals, and then some other results should go in our way.
Okay. And I guess looking at where the Denmark team is now, obviously you got to the semi-finals of Euro 2013 last year. Do you feel that the team has progressed from there? Because that was a really good tournament for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very good tournament. Even though we didn't win a match in the regular time, we did a good European Championship. We got to the semi-final and almost got to the final. So it was one of the best championship we have done for a long time. But yeah, right now we after the European, we lost a lot of players who was getting pregnant and who wanted to stop playing. So it's a new team right now and a new coach and a new way of playing. So there is a lot of new things we have to start. So I think that's the reason why we haven't done it that good in the World Cup qualify. So,
was it frustrating when last year, obviously you mentioned there that Denmark didn't win a game, there were some, and it was only some, that were critical that Denmark had managed to get so far without winning a game in normal time. Was that something that you just ignored, or was it something that you were aware of and did bother you?
I was aware of it, but I ignored it. if you don't have to win a game to come to the semifinal, it's just, the way it is. But the most important thing is to get to the semifinal. And of course it would have been cooler if you had won the game, but won some games, but we got to the semifinal and that's it.
Absolutely. You tell them, Pernell. You tell them. There's people can be as critical as they like, but at the end of the day, you got to the semi-finals, and that's what goes on the tournament record. Exactly.
I would rather don't win a match and come to the semi-final than win one and lose three and not come to the semi-final.
I guess my final question, because I don't want to keep you any longer, what's your personal ambitions? As I mentioned, you're a young player, still in your early 20s. You've got a long career ahead of you. What are the sort of things that you're hoping to achieve between now and maybe the next 3 or 4 years?
I hope to achieve some championships. Now I'm going to play in Linköping for 2 more years. So I hope that I can win the Swedish championship with Linköping. And then I also want to try some other leagues, and then I want to develop all the time and see how good I can be, and I don't know how good it is, but we will see.
Well, I said that was my final question, but based on that answer, you mentioned other leagues that you'd like to try. Is there any that appeal to you immediately?
I would like to try the German league and the France, and if the English league is getting even better all the time, and that was also be nice to play over there. And of course also USA someday.
Okay, well, we cover all of those leagues, so we'll certainly be making sure that if you do move to one of them, we'll be keeping an eye on your progress. But I won't keep you for any longer, Pernell. Thank you very much for joining me, and the very best of luck. I will certainly be trying to get to your Champions League game against Liverpool, so I may well see you there, but until then, I wish you the very best for the rest of the Damallsvenskan and for the 2 games you've got coming up with Denmark.
Thank you.
Download and subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Just search for Women's Football Podcast.
Okay, so that was Pernille Harder talking all things Champions League and World Cup qualification with Denmark. Now, I said at the start of the show we would have an any other news section. Screw that, we're not going to do that. We are going to do something much better. We're going to do a Q&A with Jess Fishlock, because Jess has a lot of fans and a lot of people who are interested, and she sniggers and she's probably going very red. But who cares? She can answer some questions from you guys. We put it out on Twitter for people to send in their questions. So you sent a lot, so I need to try and pick some. So apologies if your question doesn't get asked, but there were a lot that was sent our way. So the first one, Jesus, there are some people who've got some weird names. Let's pick one. Okay, let's go with Heather hashtag Team Mandy, who asked, among your new teammates, who's the one that impressed you the most in training and games?
Marjan. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Don't know her that well yet.
Jennifer Marjan. Yep, good pronunciation. Yeah. Good pronunciation.
Marjan is quite outstanding from what I've seen. She's honestly brilliant, and I'm really, really looking forward to being able to, you know, play alongside her and hopefully be successful this year. But she's honestly, I think one of the first training sessions, I literally just watched her train for about an hour, just sat there and watched her. That was it, and it was a very good hour well spent. So yeah, Marjan has been definitely a great player.
Being touted as a player to watch in terms of contending for best player in the world in the coming years, obviously still only, I think, 21, 22 mm-hmm. years old, and plays that number 10 role as good as anyone. Obviously, we've mentioned the likes of Lauren Holliday and Kelly Smith, and Marjan's name is popping up in the same sentence as those two. So definitely, definitely big words from certain experts who are building her up. Matt L asks, what makes European coffee better than that in Seattle and Portland? Now, I know, having sat with you for coffee out in Seattle, you like a coffee, so tell me why European coffee is better.
Yes, you know, as soon as I tweeted that, I thought to myself, it's going to come back around and bite me right on the bum. You know, I think we just have a really like deep coffee, like bold, just real soft coffee, you could say, soft and bold, whereas sometimes I feel in the US it's quite harsh, quite a little bit, like, kind of makes you go you know, like in your mouth a little bit. So yeah, I just really, really miss a nice espresso macchiato from Europe.
And this is why I'm stopping the Women's Football Podcast, because I am due to start the Women's Coffee Podcast, and Jess Fishlock is going to be my co-presenter on every episode.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about coffee from all over around the world. So there you go. My secret is out. Who else should we go for? Her Circumstance asked the question, any thoughts on the increase in loans from the NWSL? Short-term solution to NWSL off months, or a unique perk?
Good question. It'll be interesting to see if the leagues continue to, I guess, support each other with regards to the transfer window right now. I know that, for instance, next year, if the NWSL goes until the end of September, then you miss transfer windows. So then that might be an issue. But whether there's a way around there, I don't know. But like I said, you know, the leagues are so... The NWSL is a short league, and you have the W League, the Australian League, that is perfect. You know, loads of team players from the NWSL have gone to the W League because it's perfect, really. You combine them both and you get a good 9 out of 12 months of playing football in, you know, two amazing countries, because, you know, Australia is fantastic. So is it just a peak? I don't think so. I think it'll be something that you'll see quite regularly, because I also think that it's something good for when the Americans, say, when they come out of college and you know, playing in the NWSL and getting some experience, they'll go and get experience playing overboard too, because it suits a transfer window. So I think, and you know, the national American team players will, you know, I'm sure will want to come over and play and have a big chance of of winning the Champions League, which is what a lot of the Americans have done already. So I don't think it's something that is just a peak. I think it's something that you'll see continue.
Okay. Quite like this one from Heather. Funniest memory from the 2014 Seattle rain season?
Oh, God. I could honestly be here all day.
We know about Sumi doing her eyebrows at halftime in New Jersey, so we've covered that one off.
We've done that one. There was the time when we were all standing ready to play and do the national anthem, and then Laura Harvey was stood opposite us with Sid's actual kit top, where Sid has forgotten to change, and so she's come out ready to play in a warm-up t-shirt, and didn't even realise that she hadn't changed into her actual kit, which was a little bit funny because Harvey was just standing there holding up Sid's shirt, and Sid was like, "How have you got my shirt?" And then she actually had to physically look in her, open up her warm-up jacket and look for her to realise that she didn't have her shirt on. Just sums up Sid, actually, hence why she got Donkey of the Year.
Okay, Miss Midfield asked, if Team GB reformed, you would definitely be in my lineup. Which three players would you like to see in the team alongside you?
Oh, God, that is a good question. I would probably go...
How about, to make it easy for you, how about you pick one player from Wales, one player from England and one player from Scotland?
Okay, brilliant. Then I would go Sophie Ingle from Wales. Kim, obviously, from Scotland. And from England, I would probably go... It's a very difficult question. You know what? I'd probably go Kaz Kani.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Good choice. Had a good season.
I really like Kaz Kani. Yeah.
Good season with Birmingham ladies this season, yeah. Definitely. Jacqueline asked, very similar question, if you could pick any three players in the world to play alongside you, who would they be?
Oh, God. In the whole world?
Yep.
I'm going to go Marjan because I haven't seen enough of her yet, but I think she would be great. I'm going to have to go Marjan. Okay, you know what? I'm going to go a midfielder, a defender, and a striker.
Go for it.
And it'll be good. Okay, so my defender would be... I'm going to go Becky Sauerbrunn. I would love to play with Becky Sauerbrunn. I think she's a great player. So I'm going to go Becky. Then I'm going to go Marjan. Sorry, Kimmy, I'm going to have to throw it in there, but just because I played with you, so I'm just going to put Marjan in there, but I still think you're great. And then for my striker, Lotta Schelling. She's still one of my faves. I think she's great.
Good choice.
So they're my three. And that was a very hard question, and I feel really bad because I didn't pick any Seattle Rain.
You should feel bad. You should feel bad. Shame on you, Jess. Shame on you. Absolute shame on you.
I know.
Well, here's a chance for you to...
Is this because I've already played for them? So we'll just say that I wasn't allowed to pick any Seattle Rain players, okay? We'll just throw that in there.
All right. Well,
We'll throw that in.
All right. Someone with the same surname as you, with the first name Gareth, how much more natural ability, genuinely, does your older brother Gareth possess when it comes to football?
You know what, right? I'll give him some credit. He's not bad. The unfortunate thing for Gareth, and he still has this issue right now, is he is Darren Anderton.
Sick note.
And so... You can't ever comment on his ability because he's always a sick note. So until he gets over that, I can't say anything. So sorry, guys. Come back to me when you can do 5K without crying.
Well, you know what? I will keep on the family theme and then go back to the other questions. How inspiring is your oldest brother, James? And that comes from another fishlock by the name of Jim.
He's not that inspiring because he keeps on clogging up my Twitter feed with Liverpool pods. And as you know, I'm a United fan, so that doesn't go down too well.
Well, a few people have asked who your team is that you support, so you've answered that question with Man United.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you very much to Gareth and Jim for the family questions. I'm actually looking at a lot of the questions that have been asked by people, and to be fair, Jess has answered them at some point across the podcast. So, Jess, thank you very much. I have one final question before we kind of conclude the podcast, and it concerns the Wales men's qualifier that took place last night in Andorra. Lots of media hype surrounding the 3G pitch that the men had to play on. Gareth Bale described it as the worst pitch he's ever played on. Now, it's had a lot of media attention. I saw outlets such as BBC and Sky Sports, which are, for people who don't know, are big outlets here in the UK, asking for people's views. Now, as we know, there is a World Cup that is taking place in Canada next year, which will be largely on 3G. It doesn't get quite as much publicity as Wales's qualifier did last night for the men, does it?
No. It's actually quite interesting because I obviously followed the game. And it was really interesting to read the amount of publicity and see the amount of media that it got. Bearing in mind that everything that had been going on about the Turf World Cup from the women's side has really just kind of been, you know, a little bit on Twitter, a little bit here, and just, you know, the woman football side of it has been covering it. So it was interesting to see that, you know, largely because probably Wales looked like at the time that they might have had a really bad result. Thankfully, they didn't. But even though they won and there's still all this hype, you know, imagine if they'd have lost. I would have hated to imagine, or they have drawn it. I would have hated to have imagined what would have gone on then. I just think it's funny how, you know, they can come out and say it's the worst pitch they've ever played on. It shouldn't be playable for a European qualifier, and you know, it's just you shouldn't have to play on it. And yet, no one is saying anything really on that side of it with regards to the fact that the whole of the Women's World Cup is on this surface. And you know, it is really interesting to see if anything does happen. If, you know, all of that, everything has been brought up, whether FIFA, UEFA go, well, you know what, maybe this is something that we do need to look at. You know, maybe it's something that in the future isn't okay or is okay. I don't know, it's just a really interesting topic, I think.
Absolutely. Well, a topic of discussion that's been very, very prominent in the women's game is the World Cup next year on the 3G pitches. That will conclude the Q&A with Jess. Thank you very much, and many apologies to those that didn't get their questions asked. Please don't be put off for future Q&As. We will continue to do them. Actually, no, we won't, because next one will be the last show, but apologies that you didn't get them answered on this one. I may well do a Q&A with a guest that we have on the next show. When we come back, we will just conclude rounding up all the details that you need to get in contact with us.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so many thanks to Jess for answering your questions and a few of mine, and that brings us to the end of the penultimate show. So if you would like to follow us on Twitter, we're on at WFPod. If you wish to listen to the show online, you can do. We're on audioboo.fm/WFPod. You can also listen to us by downloading the show on iTunes. If you wish to email us any feedback, you can do. Always welcome it, whether it's good or bad. It's at thewfpod@gmail.com. And I think that pretty much rounds everything off. For anyone waiting for the Brandy Chastain competition entry results, I will post them on Twitter in the next couple of days as an apology for the delay, and also in the hope that I can at least encourage some people to not be too disappointed by the fact the show is finishing. Jess has kindly offered to give a Wales shirt away as a prize, so I will post up a competition on Twitter in the next few days as well. All that is left for me to do is to say thank you very much, Jess, for coming on once again.
Absolutely no problem. It's always a pleasure.
It is always my pleasure. I will say that. Always a pleasure to have you on. I will speak to all of you guys for the final show in the next couple of weeks.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.